1 Corinthians chapter 9. Talk about being free. As we saw on Sunday morning, Paul makes this incredible declaration of liberty. In chapter 10, verse 23, he declares, "All things are lawful unto me." The Christian life is not a bunch of rules and regulations, do's and don'ts, restrictions and limitations. Man, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." If you weren't here on Sunday, perhaps you'll want to pick up that tape, "Give Me Liberty." Because there's no ethic, there's no philosophy in the history of humanity that is so broad, so liberating, when Paul declares, "All things are lawful unto me as a Christian." Now, in chapter 8, 9, and 10, as Paul celebrates his liberty, he also says this, that liberty is to be used judiciously, carefully, that he will not allow his liberty to do certain things that he has freedom to do. He will not exercise such liberty if it's going to stumble another brother. In 8, 9, and 10, as we have seen previously, this question came to Paul about meat that had been offered previously to idols. And after the sacrifice was made, it was sold at a discount rate in the shambles. And the Christian said, "Paul, can we buy this meat? It's a good deal." Some said, "Hey, it's a financially prudent move to buy this meat." Others said, "How could you? How dare you eat meat that was previously sacrificed to heathen idols?" So there was a great controversy. And Paul says, "Hey, it's no problema." Well, he said it's not an issue, really, that the meat was offered to an idol, unless, you see, it causes a weaker brother, a weaker sister, one who tends to be legalistic, one who has rules and regulations and restrictions, one whose weak conscience will be defiled, or one who will be offended. Paul says, because I will not stumble a weaker brother, a weaker sister, who tends to be legalistic, bound up in religion, you see, I won't eat meat if it causes one of them to stumble. And then in chapter 9, he uses himself as an illustration of one who let go of certain rights and privileges. He talked about his own life, and we saw that last Wednesday evening, how he let go certain things that he could claim to do or have a right to do. But in reality, "I don't want to stumble you." And he used himself as an illustration, you see. Now, at any given time, chapter 8 and 9 points out to us, we are either going to be a stepping stone for people to get closer to the Lord, or a stumbling block to people, keeping them from the Lord. At any given moment, in any given day, I am either going to be a stepping stone for people to get closer to the Lord, or I'm going to be a stumbling block keeping people from the Lord. Paul says in verse 9 of chapter 8, "Take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling stone, a stumbling block to them who are weak." So gang, be careful, Paul would say to you and me tonight. You're free. But don't use your liberty foolishly, causing people to stumble, you see. Don't be a stumbling stone or a stumbling block. Be a stepping stone. You say, hey, I don't like the sounds of that. Why should I be a stepping stone? I'm tired of being stepped on. I don't like the sound of being a stepping stone. Okay, I won't be a stumbling block, but don't ask me to be a stepping stone. Paul said in chapter 9, basically, essentially, step on me. He says, man, though verse 19, I am free from all men, yet I make myself a servant to all. I'm free, but I'm going to serve everybody. How? To the Jews, verse 20, I become as a Jew. To them that are under the law, I become under the law. To them that are outside of the law, verse 21, then I live outside of the law. To them, verse 22, that are weak, I become weak. And this, verse 23, I do for the gospel's sake. Man, I'll just fit in, step on me. I'll become like you, you see, that you might move into the kingdom, that you might be saved. This is wisdom. Now here's the question. You might say, well, good for Paul, whoopee-doo. I'm glad that he's such a big man or such a deep believer that he was willing to say, I'll let go of my rights. I'll become whatever I need to be to win you and save you eternally. But why should I? We pick up now where we left off and Paul says, hey, to you and me. There's a reason why we should be ready and willing for people to step on us, take advantage of us, do whatever to us, if indeed that will allow them to get closer to the Lord, even though it means stepping on my rights personally. Why should I? Here's why. Know this, verse 24. Know this. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but only one receives the prize? So you run that you might obtain. Paul says, here's why I let go of my liberty. Here's why I become a servant to all men. I go back under the law, if you would, to those that are relating to the law. I become weak to those that are weak. I fit in. I let go of my rights and privileges to win men and relate to men. Be effective with men. Why? Because I'm running. Step on me. Use me. But I want you to know that it's all because I understand the big picture eternally. We're in a race. And I want to win the prize. You see, Paul knew that eternity was real. He was left for dead outside of Lystra, or was it Derbe? Be that as it may, he was stoned in that city with rocks. And he was left for dead. At such a time, he was caught up into the third heavens. He said, whether or not I was in the spirit or actually caught up, I don't really know, but somehow I was there. And what I saw blew my mind, and what I saw I can't even articulate to you. It would be unlawful for me to speak such things, you see. Impossible. Unlawful. But when he came back, when he was resurrected from the dead, if you would, when he came back to life, from that time on he said, man, I'm going for one thing, the prize. I've had a sneak preview of coming attractions. And nothing else matters now but winning the prize. It's real. Don't you know that in a race, only one man wins? Well, John, Paul obviously is lapping me. If only one man wins, I don't have a prayer. Understand this. You're not competing against any other brother or any other sister. You're competing against yourself. The gifts that God has given you, the talents and abilities that He's embedded in you, you're running against yourself. Jesus' teaching on the talents and on the pounds makes that oh so clear. You're not competing against another sister, another brother, but against what the Lord has entrusted to you. Is it being developed for His glory, and are you laying down your rights and privileges, you see, to see others brought into the kingdom? That's the race. Prizes. Paul says, understand this, you're in a race, verse 24, run that you might obtain the prize. Every man, verse 25, that strives for the mastery, that's the wrestling match, you see, changing metaphors here. Still speaking of sports, still talking about athletics. He shifts gear from running the race to wrestling on a mat. Don't you know that every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things? They do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. Paul is making references here to athletics, for you see, here in Corinth, the second most important athletic games in all of the empire took place, the Isthmus Games. The Olympics took place in Athens. The Olympics were the big ones, the Super Bowl. But this was sort of like the Pro Bowl, if you would. This was the second biggest athletic thing taking place, the games that were held in Corinth. The folks in Corinth were really understanding the metaphors, for they lived in a very athletic community. Yeah, they knew about running races. They knew about the mastery, the wrestling matches. And they watched these athletes come into their town a year before the games took place to train undistractedly. To train and put their bodies under all kinds of ordeals to prepare for the games that would happen, and winning the prize was what was on their minds, you see. Now, Paul points out this, and listen carefully. Run to win the prize. Wrestle this thing called life in such a way that you'll win. That you'll gain the incorruptible crown. These athletes, runners and wrestlers, they get a corruptible crown. What is that? They got a little laurel wreath put on their heads. You know, some leaves. Whoopee-doo. Paul says, that leaf, that wreath, man, it fades away. But look what they do to get that prize. How about you? Your crown, my crown, is incorruptible. Now you may say, so what? Big deal. I still don't get it, Paul. You tell us that we're to let go of our rights and take into consideration others, that they might get closer to the Lord or be won for the Lord, saved, born again, in order to get a prize, a crown that doesn't fade away. But I'm not into crowns. Quite frankly, Paul or John, if you went into my closet, looked around, you wouldn't see a single crown there. I'm just not into them. I don't care about crowns. I'm not impressed with crowns. Crowns aren't my deal. Scriptures talk about crowns, enumerating five specifically, probably many more. The crown that Paul is referring to here is linked with what Proverbs chapter 11 says, he that wins souls is wise. Daniel chapter 12 says, they that win souls shall shine as the stars forever. James talks about a crown that is given to those who lead people into the kingdom, closer to the Lord, you see. A crown is given for you who say, I'm more concerned about seeing folks saved than my pleasure, my ease, my liberty. A crown will be given to you personally. And this crown is not just to wear on your head like they used to do in the Imperial Margarine commercial. Doot-doodaloo, look at me. That's not it. When Daniel in chapter 12 wrote for us that the one that wins souls will shine like the stars, that causes us to now understand a little more fully what Paul will say in 1 Corinthians 15. He talks about the resurrection from the dead and he says, look, just like there are different intensities of stars in the sky, so it will be in the resurrection. We'll all be in heaven. But just like tonight, if you go outside and look up in the skies, some stars shine bright, others are barely there. Others you don't see at all. And that is what Paul is saying it's going to be like in the kingdom. Some are going to shine brightly. Others are going to be twinkling. Others are going to be, where is he? Everybody in heaven is going to be totally, completely happy. But your function in heaven and your capacity to enjoy eternity is directly linked to the crowns that you win. Those who win souls, Daniel tells us, will shine like the stars. What stars? 1 Corinthians 15 explains to us, heaven, man, there's different intensities, there's different vibrancy. Everybody's happy, but their capacities vary greatly. Benjamin is thrilled. He's chair monitor. Mrs. Williams, his kindergarten teacher, made him chair monitor. He gets to make sure that all the chairs are slid in behind or underneath the desks when the bell goes off and the kids go out to play. He gets to make sure that all the chairs are put away. He's so thrilled. Now, if you told me tonight, John, your chair monitor, well, it just wouldn't excite me. I wouldn't be elated. I wouldn't be going, wow, chair monitor. I can't wait to tell Tammy I'm chair monitor. Now, for Benny, my kindergartner, that's a big deal. For me, now that I'm 31, it no longer has the impact. Because you see, my capacity and understanding and involvement with life is bigger than being a chair monitor at this point. In heaven, everybody's going to be happy. But some are going to rule over 10 cities, Jesus said. Others 5 cities. Others 1 city. When the kingdom is established, others are going to be chair monitors. Everybody's happy. And there'll be some going, ooh, I get to push in the chairs. And we'll say, oh, that's great. As you rule over Maui, or whatever it might be, I don't fully understand how all these things work out. I just know this. In heaven, you'll be happy, but understand this. Some will rule over 10 cities, others 5 cities, others 1 city. Others will get in as though by fire. Others will be chair monitors. Others, you see, Paul understood this, and he says, these crowns determine that. It's not something you wear on your head and say, doesn't this look great? That's not it. The crown determines what you are going to be doing for the next zillion years. What if we really believe that? What if I really believe that? What if I really believed what the Word is saying? Man, you mean winning souls? There's a crown that's imperishable that will affect who I am and what I do and how I perceive eternity? Is that really true? You mean I really am in a race? If we really believed it, I guarantee that when tomorrow comes around, every one of us would be looking for an opportunity to be stepped on. If that meant that the person that we were laying it down for would somehow see something of him or come into a saving knowledge of him, we would say, yeah, man. Gladly I'll be a stepping stone if that will lead to your salvation or a closer walk of intimacy between you and him, and that means that I get rewarded eternally. You say, John, that sounds selfish. Talk to Paul. The Lord's just telling it like it is, saying, man, what I do with my life is important. Run to win the prize. Don't bury your talents, man. Don't waste your time. Don't frittle away your resources and your money stupidly. Paul says, run. I'm doing this. This is why I'm laying it down. All these things he talks through in chapter 9. All the rights he gives up. He says, this is why I'm running to win the prize. This is why I understand this wrestling match that I'm in. I've got to be on guard and temperate and sharp. And I won't exercise my liberty if it will dull me. Now, watch this. You athletes and coaches and grapplers and runners. Every man that strives for mastery, he's temperate to win the crown, which will affect his capacity to enjoy eternity and what he does in the ages to come. I therefore so run, verse 26, not as uncertainly. And I fight, now he talks about boxing, not as one that beats the air, but I keep under my body. Underline that phrase. I keep under my body, or literally, I keep my body under. And I bring my body into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. The word castaway there is, as your newer translations render it, many of them, lest I should be disqualified. Lest after I've been in this race, sharing with others, ministering to others, if I don't keep my body under, I can become disqualified in the race that I'm running. What do you mean? Now keep in mind the context. Follow the flow. Feel the story unfolding. Paul says, I let go of my liberty in order that I might win people to Jesus. Why do I do that? Because I'm in a race. A race that culminates in a prize, an incorruptible prize, an important prize that will affect who I am and what I do in the ages to come. Therefore, he says, My concern is to win men's souls. And I can be disqualified if I don't keep my body under. What do you mean? If my flesh is not in control, under, if you would, it will stumble another. Even though I am free to do all sorts of things, even though I have liberty, if I indulge my flesh, it will stumble or trip up somebody else. That's the message here. He's warning us about not stumbling another brother or stumbling another sister. And if in a race you trip up somebody else, guess what happens? Ask Zola Budd. Remember her? The last Olympics? Mary Decker, she should have won the gold. In that 1500 meter race. Man, she was favored to win. She was in shape. She was running her best times. Mary Decker was there, man. But Zola Budd, also a talented, gifted runner from South Africa, the gun went off and they shot out. And as they rounded the corner, Zola Budd leaned into Mary Decker and Mary Decker fell down and was out of the race. Zola Budd stumbled Mary Decker, because Zola Budd's flesh, literally, in the race, was out of control. She stumbled Mary Decker. Mary Decker is down on the ground. Zola goes after her and talks with her when the race is over and said, "This Bud's for you." No, she didn't say that. She was down on the ground. Stumbled her. Now what happens? The official comes out and looks at Zola Budd and says, "You're disqualified because you stumbled another runner." This is what Paul is getting at. He's saying, I am in danger in this race that I'm running. I am in danger in what I'm doing because, you see, if indeed I stumble somebody else, it will disqualify me. So I will not exercise my liberty if it causes somebody else to stumble and become disqualified from the race. Now, what does Paul say? Therefore, I keep my body under. I can't let my flesh get out of control because it could stumble someone else and I would be disqualified. I would be a castaway. I wouldn't win the prize that I'm striving for. So what does it mean to keep your body under? This is so important. Oh, I can drink. I can go there. I can hang out at that place. I can rent that video. All things are lawful unto me. I'm free. Well, careful. You let your flesh dominate who you are, where you go, the way you act, and there's somebody that's going to be tripped up. And it will disqualify you from winning the prize, you see. So keep your body under. Be disciplined. That's what Paul is saying. I'm going to be disciplined. Not that I'm under these regulations, but I see the validity of living a disciplined life, keeping my flesh, my body under. Let me back up. Before you were saved, your body was not under. Your body was on top. The flesh. The natural man is body on the top, soul and spirit. The soul, as you know, is your mind, your emotions. It's who you are in personality. The spirit is the real you that lives forever. The body is this thing that's sitting in the pew right now presently. The natural man, the body's on top. The spirit is dead under. The soul, the mind and the emotions, is being ruled by the body. I want to do this, the body says. I want to be appeased there, the body says. Give in to this. Go there. Do that. The body controls. And all you have to do is listen to the conversations that take place tomorrow at work or on the campus, and you'll hear the average person, the natural man, talking about perpetually his body, his flesh, who he was with last weekend, what he did recreationally to stimulate his flesh, the hot new bar he discovered, or the sizzling steak that he fried up or barbecued or whatever. The natural man, his soul, which is his mind, his emotions, are completely controlled by his body. Suddenly, he gets saved. Boom! He's born again. Everything is different. The spirit now is alive. The spirit now is on top. Now what he thinks about in the soul, where his heart is at emotionally, is no longer what girl he can get or what party he can find. The flesh is not what dominates him any longer. Now he's a spiritual man. He's spiritual. And Romans declares to us directly to be carnally minded. Fleshly minded is death, because it doesn't satisfy. But to be spiritually minded is what? Life and peace. And suddenly, wow, I got baptized Sunday, or I went forward Sunday, or I opened my heart to the Lord Sunday. And man, everything is different. The way that I look at life, the way I feel about people, I'm in a whole different space. What happened? He's born again. Now the Spirit is on top. And what he talks about and thinks about is no longer the flesh, his body. His body is under. And it's great. The grass is greener. The sky is bluer. Life makes sense. Peace in his heart. But then, as time goes on, the flesh hates being on the bottom. My flesh hates being down here. My flesh hates the basement. My flesh hates being under. And my flesh demands to make it back to the top again. You see, the soul always stays in the middle. There's always a war going on, Paul tells us in Romans. There's a war, a battle between the flesh and the spirit. The soul always stays in the middle. That's the only issue in life as it relates to your kids or in our situation. Is our soul, our mind and emotions going to be controlled by our flesh or by the spirit? That's the battle. Every day that battle is being fought. So now I'm born again, but yet my flesh is really ticked off, really upset, really mad at being down here. So my flesh begins to flare up and saying, hey, appease me. That gang at the bar, they were pretty nice to hang with, weren't they? What's the big deal? Or, so what? NYPD Blue is being critically acclaimed. Haven't you read the articles? Oh, so what? There's a little nudity. Hey, you're mature. It's for mature audiences, and aren't you mature? Yeah, I am. Well, then it's for you. Okay. You see. And the flesh begins to demand to be satisfied, and then I'm a mess. For to be carnally or fleshly minded is death. And I get to that place where I say, Lord, forgive me. I've been giving into the flesh again. and I confess my sin and I turn my life back over to Him, and I'm filled with the Spirit once more. Now, John, does this war have to go on daily, hourly, constantly? Paul says, here's the key. Paul says, I keep my body under. I will not allow my body to dominate what I do with my time. I will not allow my body to dominate the things I watch on TV. I will not allow my body to dominate. I put my body under. I keep it in the basement. How? Let me suggest to you a very practical thing to do. How long has it been since you've said no to your stomach? Feed me. Feed me. Growl. Feed me. And you said no. I'm going to put my body under. I'm going to say no to the physical. The growling. The demanding. I'm going to say no to the physical. And instead, I'm going to use that time that I would be chowing down and feeding my body. I'm going to use that time to pray. I'm going to take that hour that I would have lunch or dinner. And I'm going to pull away and I'm going to pray. I'm going to pray for people. I'm going to pray for my family. I'm going to pray for the community. I'm going to worship the Lord. I'm going to pray for me because I'm struggling with this temptation or I have that addiction. I'm going to put my body under. That's called fasting. Jesus said, when you fast, not if you fast, or here's an option for you to consider. He said, when you fast. Fast. Don't make a big deal letting everybody know that you're putting your body under. Just when you do it quietly. But the implication is, do it. Oh, I'm so addicted to pornography. Fast. Say no to your stomach. And when you say no to your stomach, Isaiah chapter 30 talks about the chosen fast, the bands of wickedness being broken. You say no to your stomach regularly, and it will be amazing how much easier it will be to say no to those other sensual temptations. Fasting is only one of the many disciplines that the Bible teaches, not to be weird, but to be free. And Paul says, this is what I do regularly. I make sure that my body is not being pampered. I keep it under. Lest I weave over into another lane in the race that I'm running and knock somebody down, stumble them, and be disqualified myself. I can't do that. I've got to keep my body under if I'm going to win the prize. Getting up in the morning. Saying no when your body says, hit the snooze bar. You say no. Body, you're under. You're not ruling me. I'm out of bed, I'm on my knees, I'm in the Word, whatever. And Lord, I'm going to honor You, I'm going to follow the Spirit. I'm not going to cave in to the demands and cravings of the body. I'm going to follow Your example, Jesus, rising up a great while before morning, seeking direction. not caving into my fleshly inclinations to pull the covers up and sleep in a little longer. I keep my body under, Paul says. It's Friday night. Oh man, the gang's getting together to do line dancing at the Nendell's Rock and Rodeo. Ooh, that should be fulfilling. We'll go down there and do the Texas two-hop and see the people in their boots, and it'll be real cool. And we'll have a drink or two. Keep your body under. Be radical. Say, you know what? I'm going to pass on rock and rodeo. You're going to miss a real good time, I know. People are real happy there. That's why they call it happy. Ever wonder why bars call that 5 o'clock or whatever time happy hour? Ever been around drinkers during happy hour? It's the saddest, most depressing, disgusting thing you'll ever see. Crying and weeping and moaning about this problem or that struggle. Hey, why don't you pass up happy hour, and why don't you pass up rock and rodeo, and why don't you say, you know what, there's a worship thing happening out at Applegate. I'm going to put my body under. I'm going to worship the Lord tonight. My spirit is going to be controlling. My spirit, touched by His Spirit, is going to be controlling my soul, my mind, and my emotions. And man, I'm not going to give in to my body. And I'm tired of the body ruling over me and the death that inevitably comes about. But I like country music dancing. Listen to the words of the country musician and say, is this life and peace, or is this death? What are they singing about? What's the message? What's the vibe? What's going on? Is it the spirit, or is it the flesh? You make a determination. You make an evaluation. You decide. And if you conclude, you know, this is really fleshy, then put it under. Put it in the basement. Bury it. It's like inside of me, there's this perpetual struggle, two dogs battling, a white dog and a black dog. And man, it's a dog fight. But I noticed this, I've discovered it to be true, and I want to share it with you, and that is, if I feed constantly the white dog, he gets bigger and stronger and tougher. He becomes a cross between a Saint Bernard and a Doberman Pinscher. Big, massive, and strong. If I feed the white dog, if I feed him, and the black dog becomes a chihuahua in me, you see. On the other hand, if I feed the flesh, the black dog, watching fleshly stuff, reading fleshly things, going fleshly places, the black dog gets bigger, tougher, and stronger, and the white dog in me diminishes proportionately. People come to you, don't they, all the time? I'm just getting chewed up. I'm just so mad. I'm so bitter. I'm so sad. I'm just getting chewed up. Well, who you been feeding? That's always my question, in one way or another. Who are you feeding? Are you feeding the black dog? Could I see your Blockbuster card? Could I see your Blockbuster record over the past year? Let me see your Blockbuster account, and I'll tell you who you're feeding. Let me see your checkbook register, and I'll tell you who you're feeding. Let me see your day timer, and I'll tell you who you're feeding. And if you're feeding the black dog, man, don't come barking around here when you're getting chewed up and scratched and bleeding. It's all a question of who are you feeding. On the other hand, if you feed the white dog, tend the things of the Spirit and starve the body, starve the black dog, starve the flesh. Funny thing happens. You walk in victory. You run the race successfully. You don't stumble the guy in the next lane and disqualify you, you see. You don't become a castaway. But rather, you will hear those words in heaven, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter in," and you'll look around and then you'll understand as you see the crown given to you and cast it back before Him saying, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power," and He will receive that treasure, but at the same time give you an assignment in eternity that will blow your mind and bless your heart, and you'll say, "Oh, I'm so glad that I kept my body under," as you look over here and see that chair monitor. You'll never regret knocking rock and rodeo out of your life when you get to heaven. I promise you that. You'll never regret the things that you let go, that you had liberty. I'm free, aren't I? Yeah, all things are lawful. But wait a minute. Not all things are expedient. Some things will disqualify you. What things? The things that stumble another. The things that wipe out your spiritual stamina and affect your endurance. Keep your body under. Can I ask you this? Are you as disciplined in your spiritual life today as you were a year ago or 5 years ago? Or have you, in your appreciation for the finished work of the cross, in your understanding that your salvation is secured apart from anything you do or don't do, but has that skewed your thinking? Yes, you're set free, but now have you used that liberty in a way that's stumbling others and disqualifying you? Boy, I must be careful. My brother Paul gives me lots to chew on. I celebrate my liberty. I'm free from religiosity. I'm not interested in rules and regulations, you see. But I also understand the implication of using my liberty rightly. It leads to eternal satisfaction. Using my liberty wrongly leads to my disqualification from the prize that could be mine, you see. Let he who has ears to hear what the Spirit says to the church at Applegate tonight. Keep your body under. For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Let it go.